It's the Two Smokes Podcast with your hosts, Thundersnow and the Wiggle Rat.
Hi, and welcome back to the Two Smokes Podcast. I am the Wiggle Rat, and across from me...
I didn't even have to do anything that time.
And across from me is the Lily White Libertine, albino known
as... Ooh, I like it. I like it.
Known as Thundersnow. And, last week we did psychological self-help, but because psychology, your psychological axis is such a broad one, we covered the intellect pretty well last episode, but one of the things we didn't really cover, I think, sufficiently was emotional self-care, because that is a part of your psychology. And we talked a little bit about it, but we didn't really talk in depth enough about it. And we mostly because guys, generally speaking, are perceived as having difficulties with emotions.
Well, it's a weakness, even if you got them all under control and truly sorted, to display them in any way is kind of a weakness.
Well, because we were told that macho guys, especially macho guys, don't show their emotions, when that's absolutely not the case. Yes, they do.
They show their emotions, but the majority of their emotions are anger. I'm misunderstood. I'm not. They don't adore me the way they should adore me. Whatever it is.
Well, because we got this weird idea in our head that somehow, in this misbegotten and poorly conceived idea of cool, right, that you should always be indifferent towards everything. Nothing should ever affect you emotionally, right?
Right.
You should just be completely, I don't give a fuck about everything. And maybe that's not the best way to live.
Well, and maybe it's not. But like I right now I'm reading No More Mr. Nice Guy by Dr. Robert Glover, which is, you've seen all of those videos and the endless number of books and things on the whole alpha male versus beta male versus sigma male versus omega male versus air male versus she male. he's got a rather interesting take on the whole white knight syndrome. You know, the guys that are very very self-effacing. They're to the point of almost subservience, right? Just I'm here to please you. I want to make sure that everyone around me is happy, and this and that. And his theory is basically anybody that operates that way 24 hours a day is more fucked up than the alpha male who's running around being an abusive prick. And it's very awkward to be listening to something like that in books on tape and then have your spouse walk in. Because I've had to explain to Rumbelina a few times that this season is all about self-help and that this is research for the show. And she's like, yeah, sure it is. Go get your head shrunk.
Whereas in her head, she actually thinks you're like trying to level up your asshole stat.
Exactly. She's like, no, I see what this is. Yeah, you're just grinding. You're just crunching shit. But my whole entire browser history at this point has gone from, cam girls and twisted humor and all sorts of obnoxious shit to a completely different kind of obnoxious shit, right? 12-step programs and all of this stuff. And sometimes it's hard not to get caught up in it.
What do you mean?
Some of the authors that we've talked about so far and the ones that we will talk about, here in the next couple episodes, I've been like following them on Twitter.
Oh God.
And watching the shit that they put out, right? Because at the end of the day, doesn't matter what genre you write, once you're a writer, you are by fucking default a marketer.
Okay.
Much like we probably should have done with this podcast back in the day.
What do you mean?
These guys are constantly promoting their shit.
Oh, self-promoting whores, like musicians.
Exactly. Well, and like podcasters, right? That's what I'm saying. Like, had we done that, maybe we'd be up to, like, 50 or 60 people that listen.
50 or 60. Whoa, slow down there, sir.
We can't have that kind of explosive growth, man.
Let's break into double digits first.
That's not sustainable. But no, it's become a thing, right? Where there was this whole pushback against toxic masculinity that kind of made it unacceptable for men to not only share their emotions, but even to really voice any opinions. No, no, you've had a couple hundred years, fucker. We're done listening to you.
Well, it was kind of an interesting two-prong attack, right, on masculinity. No, man bad.
Right.
But also, no, man fragile, man pussy. Wait.
Right, wait, which one is it?
Yeah, well, wait a minute. So, you can call me an intrinsic rapist and just a generally bad dude, but if I get angry about it, that's me being fragile?
Right. Oh, did I hurt the poor little snowflake's feelings?
No, what's getting ready to happen is you're getting ready to buy yourself an ass. You keep campaigning for this ass whipping, you will get elected.
Right. And well, all men want Betty Crocker in the kitchen and Mother Teresa in the street, and they want a whore in the sheets. Yeah, okay.
Dude, and let's face it.
I'll pass the Betty Crocker thing. You know what? Don't be an asshole in public and fuck me like I want to be fucked, and we'll call it a day.
I fuck you like you want to be fucked, don't I?
But hey, you know what?
And I'm in there doing my part.
And if I'm not doing it the way you want it, then obviously you have not stated your requirements plainly enough. More than happy to oblige, you just got to speak the fuck up.
I'm going to need your sexual requirements in a smart sheet. And yeah. We'll roll it up into a Gantt chart, and that's how we'll measure the progress during sex.
Why do you always slap my ass? It's been 30 years. You're just now saying something?
Well, it was cool when that song was out. I did like the way you said my name. I did like the way you slapped my ass.
Oh, God. Did you just make a Nickelback reference? Ooh, shit. Now you know that you've unleashed the evil, because now I have to make a Creed comment somewhere to offset
it. Oh, God. Yeah.
The axis of evil has been invoked. But no, I mean, the whole intent, right, is to, just like with any other of these aspects of self-care that we're talking about, right, the goal is to maintain a balance. And we've talked in just about every episode about how these things overlap and what the dependencies look like, right? How it does you no good to focus on one thing to the detriment of everything else, right? Oh, I am in peak physical condition.
Yes, but you're still an asshole.
You don't have a job because you're at the gym all day, so you lost the job. Your family left you because they got tired of listening to you talk about what was in your pre-workout and how many calories you had that day. You know, if you're suffering in every single one of these aspects, it doesn't really matter. You can't overcompensate in one. Well, I don't need dexterity. I don't need charisma. All I need is strength.
No.
You're going to need some of that other shit, too, just to let you know. I mean, obviously, you don't want to pour a whole lot of work into some of them, but...
I understand that some of those you may view as dump stats, but maybe don't dump them that much.
Exactly. Yeah, not zero. I mean, put a little something in there, right?
Take your nice 10, 11, 12, you know, because, let's face it, 46, throw out one, throw out the lowest. That's going to get you easily into the 11, 12 range, yeah, on average, yeah, for your expectation value.
Just do your thing. But yeah. But no, so the goal here is to try to be well-rounded. And, you know, we talked a lot about, making good decisions and thinking about the aspects of your life in the last episode, right? Talking about routines and habits and things like that, where we're talking about trying to get things well in hand. And when it comes to emotions, it's a bit of a sticky wicket, right? Because not only can sometimes they be a little bit nebulous to try to define in the first place, we are kind of by design put together in a way that makes us really, really good at ignoring or rationalizing the things that we're feeling.
We're kind of caught in a weird spot right now, right? Where you'll have people, you know, say things that imply that emotions are somehow absurd or irrational, right? Well, I just feel how I feel, right. You know, and those are my feelings. And I just feel like, well, I just feel that, and on the other hand, we're being told that emotions are not irrational, right? That there are, you feel the way you feel for a reason, right? And you should really attempt to understand those, because those are going to help you understand yourself better.
Right. Well, and like we talked about last season, right? How do we know that what we're feeling is both accurate and we're interpreting it correctly, right? Something happens and you get angry. There may be every good fucking reason for you to get angry, but how do you know for sure? If you haven't actually sat down and analyzed it, right? to actually test this, to say, okay, should I be? And there's an author who we'll talk about in a little bit, but her name is Susan David. And she wrote an article basically asserting that, on average, adult human beings verbally speak about 16,000 words a day.
Okay.
With that number being around there, she posits that at least three times that number of words are the words that we think to ourselves.
Okay.
As we're going through the course of the day, oh, I bet you this some bitch is going to come left and cut me off.
Look at this motherfucker right here.
That whore is going to come over here and give me more work to do. That's what she's going to do. So, you know, we've got this steady running dialogue in our heads all day. And as we've talked about before, right, it's become very easy for us to rationalize those thoughts away, right? They're completely valid. All the people in my chat group say so. You know, my viewpoint is valid, my this, my that. Obviously, my reasoning is sound, because who's more intelligent than me?
Right.
So the trick, right, is to try to make sure that you keep yourself aware of those things, right? So you've got this inner stream of thoughts and feelings, right? So you could be critical. You can be doubting, both of other people and of yourself. That's basically your mind's doing what they're designed to do, right? We're going to try to anticipate things so that we can just kind of take care of that for you, rat. Listen, we can see a problem coming down the line, and we're just going to go ahead and process that. You go about your day, do what you're doing.
Understanding things, especially understanding the way things work, and extrapolating downfield a little bit on the time axis, extrapolating forward in time a little bit to see how this could possibly turn out, is one of those things that you absolutely should, and is a good intellectual use of your time, right? If you're married and you go out and you spend $200 on a whore somewhere for a head job, you have to realize that there's at least some risk that's going to cause problems in your marriage.
Right. Yeah. Well, here's me throwing a pebble into the pond, and somehow anticipating that there will be no ripples.
Yeah. Exactly. So you need to look downstream. If I take this new job, you know, with this new commute, whatever, you know, how much stress is that going to add? You know, if I enroll my kids in this private school as opposed to public school, what are the possible outcomes there? And being able to just, like I said, visualize that shit in your head and look forward a little bit can also kind of help you perceive how you might react to that emotionally. Because there are people who are going to tell you that emotions are irrational and absurd, and I just feel the way I feel, and there's, you know, you can't help who you love, blah, 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 blah. But actually, you kind of can. Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Well, you can certainly do the work, right? At the end of the day, you may not always be 100% successful. But, I mean, the first trick there is being honest with yourself. Yes. Why do I feel like I'm in love with this person who I've just met, barely know? Could it be that she looks like this person that I used to love? Could it be that she has these attributes that, even though these others I can't stand, I value these couple of attributes so much that I can right. overlook those things? And that's kind of the piece, right? That's the ability to separate, right? You have to be able to think and make logical decisions on these emotions. But before you do that, you have to be completely honest with yourself on what that emotion is.
Absolutely.
And what's causing it. A really good example that I was going through is a mother with a career who is constantly just fatigued, depressed, stressed out because she loves the job she does. It's got great importance and she wants to excel at it. But she also loves her children and wants to stay, you know, stay with them and raise them and be all that she can be there. And the two are kind of diametrically opposed.
Yay, second wave feminism.
Exactly. So, you know, she wants to bring home the bacon and fry it up in the pan.
God bless 70s perfume commercials.
You gotta love it. But, you know, so constantly being in this state of emotional warfare, waging back and forth between, I want to be successful at this, but I also want to be successful at that. And letting just the raw emotion of it drive the discourse basically creates a frazzled, unhappy person.
Whereas opposed to, say, just realizing that everybody only gets 24 hours in a day, and you should probably spend about 8 hours of those sleeping. You're probably going to spend a little bit on commute. You're probably going to spend a little bit of time eating.
Right.
And so what's left is you're going to have to find some way to budget that. And guess what? If you lean a little more time in your family, and I'm not saying that you should or shouldn't, some of that career is going to have to be sacrificed. If you lean into your career, guess what? Your family's going to have to be sacrificed. And remember, you have to put you as an individual. You've got to work you as an individual somewhere into that day.
Right. Well, and so, you know, at the end of the day, the answer is sitting down and saying, okay, what does it take to be successful at my job? And 110% commitment of your time is not really the litmus for what will make you successful at that job. What are the tasks that I need to accomplish? What are the goals that I've set? Can I set a goal that allows me to still be home for dinner and do homework with my kids every night with the understanding that maybe sometimes I can't make it to the PTA meeting or to the Christmas recital because I've got to cover something at work that does get that goal, right? Nothing has drastically changed in that woman's life. But now, all of a sudden, she's had the actual conversation with herself about, hey, listen, I value both of these equally. And I'm not taking away from my children.
Right.
I'm not taking away, you know, not taking from my kids and giving to my job. I'm defining a balance. These are my goals on either side, and this is how I meet them. And now, all of that discord that was created between these two thoughts of guilt and
all
stress.
Of that, yeah, all of that strife and stress, all of a sudden, once you look at it and you just begin to try to understand the problem, right? First of all, you know that the conflict is what's driving those emotions, right?
Right.
Whether they're anger or frustration or confusion or even despair, right? Because no one wants to think of themselves as a bad parent or a bad employee.
Right.
Right. We all like to think we're good at our jobs, and those of us with kids like to think we were good parents.
Right. And everybody thinks they are to a certain extent, but just that conscious thought to sit down and say, okay, what do I want to achieve and how do I get there? It's no different than setting up your household budget. It's no different than anything else. I've got this much resource. This is what I want to do with the resource. Here's how far I can get. And if I want to get further ahead in the career, I've got to be willing to give up family time and vice versa. Well, no, this is about where I want the bits at. Would I love to be able to be 110% on my job and 110% on my kids? Oh, I'd love it, but that's not the way the world works.
Yeah, that's only for people who are bad at math.
And you know, really, oh, well, I'm going to be 50-50. Well, no, you're still doing yourself a disservice because you're in the middle.
Right.
And you need a little bit. You know, you don't need 50. 50 is a little extravagant to spend on yourself.
Well, hey, yeah.
I mean, you're a single guy these days, so do you spend 50% on yourself?
No.
You spend 100% with yourself, but do you spend 50% on yourself?
No, again, I have work, I have family obligations. Of course, I have friends that I look after,
right,
and things like that, and who also in turn look after me.
Right.
But that's kind of how that works, right? But accepting that and working on that, and because, right, there's this great myth about time management, right?
Right.
And that if you manage your time, you know, appropriately, or if you somehow budget your time accordingly, you know, you can get miraculous things done in a day. So let me go ahead and disabuse you of this notion. Time management and money management are both great, assuming you have an amount of those to manage. There are a lot of people out there who literally, you know, maybe they have to work two jobs,
right,
and just can't be there with the kids. Maybe they're working and going to school and can't be there with the kids. You know, they're investing in themselves so their children can have a brighter future. But until you have that slack time to budget, until you've got time in bank or money in the bank, there's nothing to fucking manage.
Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, a lot of people will look down on a parent and say, well, you're working two jobs. You never have any time to spend with your kid. You're right. I don't. And I regret that. But you know what? My kid ate this week.
Yeah.
And on Maslow's hierarchy, that's a little more important than me helping him color in the lines.
Yeah, I'm a step down the pyramid here. I'll get there.
But. Yeah, and trust me, I'm shooting for the thing you got. I'm shooting for that. But don't harsh me because I'm not in a position.
Well, because, you know, there were a lot of times, you know, when I was working two jobs and going to school that, yeah, I missed a lot of school functions.
Right.
I missed a lot of band practices. Well, actually, not band practice. I missed a lot of football practice.
Sure.
You know, I missed all kinds of things because I was literally occupied bettering myself so that I could provide a more suitable lifestyle for my kids later.
Listen, if you want to grow up bougie, your old man's got to do the work.
Hey, you're only going to get half bougie. We're going to be poor until you get about high school.
We'll come in right along at the end. We'll sweeten the pot at the end here.
Hey, I promise I'll buy you a car. I'll pay for your college.
Yeah, I appreciate you looking out for the old man and not giving me lip. Yeah. But no, I mean, so that's the thing, right? So at the end of the day, how do you know that you're taking care of your emotional self? How do you know that you're actually being at least productive in doing that, right? And so we've kind of covered the first bit already, right? You can acknowledge how you feel. You don't have to hide it or ignore it or run away from it. You know, you're able to understand that there may be a situation that you don't want to deal with. It may suck, but you have to understand that you're going to come out the other side.
Yeah, not dealing with that, not going to make that any better.
And nor will this self-help visualize success, realize that the world is bright and shiny, right? You can take this too far. We're not designed to be in despair all the time, nor are we designed to be ultimately happy all the time. And when it comes to emotional self, there's an interesting thing. It's called the Stockdale paradox. And this guy Stockdale was a soldier who was captured by the Vietnamese during the Vietnam War.
Okay.
He spent about 8 years in a POW camp. And he survived. Over the span of that 8 years, he was tortured damn near to death over 20 times in an effort to try to get information out of him, an effort to try to break him, to really sow discord amongst the other prisoners.
Shit, torturing him for 8 years? I'm pretty sure they were just using him like a crash test dummy.
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, yeah.
Because over 8 years, none of his intel would have been valuable.
Well, exactly. Well, but so you start trying to break him to get some intel while it's actionable. You continue because the son of a bitch never broke and gave you what you wanted. And so 8 years later, you're still asking the same question, even though it doesn't matter anymore, right? The war is, for all intents and purposes, over.
Right.
This isn't going to serve you, but God damn it, I will break you. And so this guy Stockdale, he was, you know, interviewed hundreds of thousands of times. You know, how did you make it? How were you able to do what so many couldn't? You know, because so many couldn't and died in those camps. Some couldn't control themselves and were rescued, and they were never the same again.
Right.
You know, and he's like, you know, well, it takes a special kind of person to survive in that environment. And they were like, well, you know, what do you mean? He goes, well, I can't tell you what it takes, but I can tell you what it doesn't take. He says, you know who didn't survive the camps? The optimists. The guys who got thrown in that cage on day one and said, well, they're going to come save us tomorrow. Those were the guys that very quickly gave up hope and lost it, where his Stockdale came to the conclusion that, look, I'm not going to bullshit you. This sucks, and it's going to suck a lot worse before it's done. But you're going to hold your ground, and eventually you will succeed. Eventually you will come out the other side of this, and you will still be you. And that mentality got him through that experience, which I can only imagine. I mean, I watched enough 80s movies to know how hellish that must have been.
Well, and absolutely it must have been hellish. But notice that this guy, you know, we talk a lot about emotional trauma, right? And you see that battered about on Twitter and things like this. And what's traumatic for one person isn't necessarily traumatic for everybody. And people being able to get through it and figure out ways to get through it, somehow we don't view that as a model for dealing with trauma.
Right.
We stopped looking at trauma as something to be overcame or conquered or even just scarred over.
Right.
It got, no. You'll bear that for the rest of your life.
Right.
And instead, you know, this guy... And I'm sure he bears some. I'm sure he bears some emotional scars.
Oh yeah, no, and I have no doubt that he's gone through some hell. But you know, the idea that he started the whole thing with the mentality of, "Yeah, this is gonna fucking hurt.
Yeah,
buckle up because this is gonna suck." But you know what? In the event that I do come through the other side, I'm still gonna be me.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that takes a lot of fucking fortitude.
It really does. And you kind of, and again, not being a psychologist, I would suspect that you got to be pretty high up on Maslow's pyramid for you to go through something like that and still say, and still stay, not actualized, but the fully formed you.
Right.
For your identity, for your personal identity to be that resilient, mm-hmm. It's got to be made out of some certain stuff.
Well, and that's the thought, right? This is a guy who was legitimately investing in his own emotional self-care. This is a guy that was doing the work, probably not even aware
right.
of the fact that he was doing the work. Rather, whatever confluence of events led him to that lifestyle, that pattern of behavior, it reinforced his emotional well-being instead of taking away from it, right?
Right.
Instead of, a lot of us operate on the idea that, okay, we were born with a 30-gallon tank, and the idea is we space it out so that, the tank goes dry right as we cross the finish line.
Right.
As opposed to, okay, no, this is a level that we need to maintain, right? We've got to put a little something back in the tank every once in a while in order to be there for the whole ride. And, this guy was able to actually say, here are the things that I need to do, right? I'm not going to sit here and cry and bitch because they're going to come hurt me again. I know when they hurt me, I'm going to cry. So we'll save that shit
right.
for when the time is right. So he was aware of his bad habits and the things that he did that weren't helping him, and he was aware of the triggers for them. So he was able to head those things off at the pass and say, there's certain things I can't control. That guy's going to come in here, he's going to make, and I won't even make the joke, it's too serious a topic. He's going to come in here, he's going to say something disgusting to me, and then he's going to hurt me for a while.
Yeah.
I can't change that. But what I can change is that when I get back into this goddamn cage afterwards, I'm going to suck it up as quickly as I can, I'll cry my tears in the corner, and then I'm going to turn around and I'm going to go help that guy. Or I'm going to work with that dude. I'm going to get myself back after that drain has been put on.
As quickly as possible, get that trauma past you.
Right.
Or get yourself past that trauma. Take your licks, and folks, and again, I don't say this to trivialize it. I'm saying this because it's important to understand that getting over your shit, even when it is terrible, horrible shit, is something that's a valuable life skill.
Right. And I know I've taken the piss out of it a little bit as we've gone through the beginning of this season, right, with this whole see your thought, acknowledge your thought, and then let it go about its way. All that mystical bullshit, I don't really buy into. But at the end of the day, that's what they mean when they're saying it.
Yeah.
This shit happened. It happened. It was bad. However, we're going to get back on the horse. We're going to take the moment. We're going to cry. We're going to shake. We're going to piss. We're going to do whatever we're going to do. And then we're going to get back on the horse. And that resilience is the thing that is key to kind of putting something extra back in that tank instead of just always burning.
Well, see, and so one of the, strangely enough, one of the advantages this guy has, right, is that he knows what's causing his emotions that he has to deal with.
Right.
But there are a lot of us just in our daily lives, you'll quote unquote wake up on the wrong side of the bed.
Right.
Or you'll be in a shit mood and you won't know why. And that's this kind of stuff that, since you don't have somebody coming in and torturing you and making you feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. You're doing it to yourself.
Yeah, you don't always know why you feel bad, and you need to go ahead and take the time to reflect. Sometimes you wake up on the wrong side of the bed just because you have a weird, shitty dream.
Right.
And you wake up in the morning, you're in a foul mood, blah, blah, blah. So how do you get past that? Well, you just take time to think about it. Really only the only reason I'm pissed off about this is because I had a bad dream. I had a dream that my wife was cheating on me. My boss kicked me in the balls.
Right. Yeah, and it shook me. But let's take stock for a minute.
Right.
Do I think my wife is actually having an affair with my boss and is going to kick me in the balls? She may kick me in the balls. But I have no evidence. As a matter of fact, I have evidence to the contrary that she's not. So why would I let that shake me? I'm going to wear that off. 9 times out of 10, you wake up in the morning pissed off. You might say, yeah, I had a dream, or, oh, I don't know, I just woke up on the wrong side of the bed. And a lot of times what it is you're not dealing with something that needs to be dealt with.
Again, it's... I don't know that dreams per se mean anything, but I do know that they help you air out a lot of weird psychological bullshit.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, a lot of stuff will squeeze its way through, right, into your subconscious, right? Just weird shit. Oh, wow, Jessica Alba, what do you got in the bag? What's in the bag? Is that a calculator? Why do you have a calculator? What's the green light for? Oh, fuck, I gotta do my taxes. Damn it. But no, I mean, a lot of us have things that we don't find easy to deal with. So it's really easy to pack them away, especially when you're filling your life with this constant cycle of, bad habits, the things that make us feel good, right? I really need to think, and I think better when I go outside and smoke. Do you think the smoke actually makes you think better, or do you think that getting away from everything in the office, going outside where it's quiet, possibly even taking your mind off of that subject for a minute, can sometimes shed a new little different perspective on an issue and allow you to solve that problem?
Again, just catching your breath intellectually or emotionally speaking has a great value to it. Now, one of the things that we're kind of avoiding a little bit right here and we kind of need to deal with is this fucking horribly woe-begotten notion that you need to quote-unquote express your feelings. Right. Well, if you're sad, you should be crying. If you're angry, you should be, committing violence or yelling or shouting or whatever. Right. And all these other things. And keep in mind, folks, that's absolutely not necessary. I know that it's much.
No shame on you if it's what comes naturally.
Oh, yeah. No,
but the idea that you should remember some horribly repressed memory and now just have a 20-minute crying jag every time you think about it. Because that's what's right.
Well, the point is that it's not that it's not okay to express your emotions, but if you are expressing your emotions, those are the times where you should be sort of thinking out loud, except not on an intellectual axis, on an emotional axis. You know, if you're pissed off and you're storming and you're yelling, you're shouting, what are you shouting about?
Right.
And why are you shouting? That should be what you should be listening to yourself while you're having your tantrum.
Right. Well, talk to yourself like you would to your kid. Stop. Why are you yelling? What are you actually angry about?
And what are you actually angry about, or what are you actually sad about,
or happy what were about? You hoping was going to happen?
Yeah.
And what are you going to do now? Right.
Yeah. Which again goes back to what we were saying earlier. If you look just a little bit down the road, a lot of these surprise emotions, if you will, can be. If not pre-metabolized or pre-chewed,
right. They
can at least be somewhat prepared for.
Uh-huh.
So, and like I said, I know people, oh, no, you just got to get it out. Has that ever worked for anybody?
I think it depends on the feeling, right? There are certain things where, especially like grief, right? Grief or overwhelming joy. Those are just kind of big surges of raw emotion, right? Usually with a cause that you had nothing to do with or were powerless to stop. In those cases, because there's just, no one likes to hear it, but there's just a lot of things in life that are not under our control. So, walking into the office and finding out that your favorite cube mate was hit by a truck that morning on the way to work and he'd gone.
Right.
There's not a lot. I mean, logically, I guess I should go get the stuff out of his cube. I should go check on his family. Those are things that you can act on. But in reality, just kind of in that moment.
Yeah.
You really don't have anything else other to do than to just try to express that feeling. I don't like the term express because it's a little too touchy and feely. I prefer the term act.
Well, because acting your way through the emotions, once you realize that you're angry and or sad or whatever the emotion is, and you can sort of track down what it is that caused it, then you can actually take steps and measures to fix
right.
it.
Well, and that's when you find out that your coworker is dead. After that initial moment of shock, yes, you can sit there and tear up and get a little sad. But when you sit down and you go, okay, that happened. There's nothing changing that. Now what? You know what? His family just found this shit out not 10 minutes before I did, or in some cases might not have even found it out yet.
Right.
what do we do there? How do we help there? What can we get into, right? And that helps you take those emotions and channel them into something, right? The quickest way to burn them off is to use them.
Well, actually. And so it, grim though it may be, right? It, because let's face it, if he's your, you know, your buddy, you know, your best work buddy, there comes a time when you'll have to delete those emails.
Right.
You know, you may even be called on to clean out that guy's cube, or
yeah, there will be a moment where the more crass employees will start divvying up the shit in his cube.
I've been that guy.
So have I.
but no, it's, believe it or not, putting those things away has the effect of helping us get past it. It's almost performative in the way that it helps you get through that grief. You know, you'll hear people, like, after their spouse dies, or, you know, God help them, after a kid dies,
right,
packing up their stuff and putting it away, you know, either in the attic or in the garage sale or just sometimes on the curb.
Right.
It helps you get through shit. It helps you close that chapter of your life. It's the same reason why we have open casket funerals, right? So people can walk by, see that, yep, that guy's dead. I got to fucking deal with that. And then, well, normally, I don't know how y'all do it, but normally we drink quite a bit.
Right.
And have a little something to eat. So
that on that day, all Italians are Irish. you take it out. It comes to you, right? Regardless of whether it is. It's super happy. It's a super happy feeling. And you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. You take it out. You look at it for a minute. You use it. You put it on a shelf. That's done. It's handled. I've processed that. I've done what needed to be done. It is now just a souvenir of an experience. It's a visual reference to look back over your life and go, here are the highs and here are the lows. It's not emotional clutter that you're still trying to deal with. Every time you need to feel an emotion, your brain's not rummaging through a sack. Here's where my dog died when I was 5. And here's where that girl said yes to let me take her to homecoming. And here's where... No, those were experiences. You did those. You had the feelings. You had the experience. Put them on the shelf. Pack them away.
And by all means, keep those memories. But the level of emotion that's tied to them doesn't need to be there. I lost a good friend several years ago. And I kept a couple of his things, right? Memento mori. The things that he had that he had left to me when he died, that I still keep. Now, there's small things, a guitar, and I wish I were making this up, a ceramic skull with a flame job on it and red LEDs for eyes. Well,
no accounting for taste.
You had to know the guy. He was really, really into that whole Rat Fink kind of aesthetic, right. And so I have the ceramic skull, and that's where I stack my hats. Right, because I'm a bald guy and I don't want to get sunspots on my head. I have to wear a lot of hats. And that's not metaphorical. Those are literal hats. But I stack them up on this ceramic skull, right? And every time I see that skull, not only do I remember that guy, not only do I remember that guy and I, we were great friends for 35 years.
Right.
And more importantly, that skull is a reminder, go ahead and keep your shit in order, because you never know when it's going to be your time.
Exactly, exactly. And when you see it, you may have a fond memory, you may have a melancholy memory, but they're memories. Mm-hmm. That's all they are. It's not an emotion that's fighting with everything else going on in your head.
Exactly. I don't pull out that skull and look at it and, have a 6-day cry about my buddy I lost. He's right. Gone.
And that's not to say that at some time, this is the anniversary of that thing that we did or whatever. No one's saying that you can't take those memories out at a later date.
Yeah.
And kind of have, a redo, right? It's some kind of emotional carryover.
But that's the difference, right? That's the difference between you controlling your emotions and your emotions controlling you. If I broke down into tears every time I saw that ceramic skull, right, that would be my emotions controlling me.
Right.
But, to go, yeah, there it is.
Exactly.
That was a good dude, man.
Man, I loved you, but this is the ugliest fucking thing I've ever seen in my life.
Holy shit.
But that's the thing, right? So this is applicable to anything. This is applicable to losing someone. This is applicable to losing a job. This is letting a marriage fail.
Yeah.
This is still living like you're the sophomore all-star starter for the football team in high school and not letting these things go, right? Whether they're good or bad to you, that stuff builds up, right? It becomes a lot to carry.
Yeah.
And the more that you're carrying, the harder it is to process new.
Well, you can only tote so much of that baggage because you get fresh emotional bullshit every day.
Well, so your emotional gas tank is kind of like Kelly Bundy's brain. There's only room for so much.
Holy shit.
And when you introduce a new thing, something else got to go. The only difference is that you don't get to pick what goes.
Oh, my God. Okay.
That's why things like movies and songs can be so evocative when you're listening to it, right? If you get the right song at the right time, it can just fucking demolish you, right?
Oh,
or it can build you up. Because those things are still in there, and every once in a while they bubble up, and that's fine, right? If there's some kind of memory trigger that brings something back, you take it, you observe it, and then it goes away. You don't dwell on it, right?
Exactly.
I don't hear a song that makes me think about a person that I lost 20 years ago and then start obsessing over, why isn't that person here? I need to get that person back, right? It's sentimental. You do it. A lot of times you do it simply because whether you're emotionally exhausted, whether you're physically exhausted, something is a little out of balance for these things to catch you most of the time.
Well, yeah, and it's because you're probably, you know, like we were talking, you're carrying some of that extra baggage, and you need to go back and reflect and go, man, why am I having such a hard time letting this go?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's having, you know, a really bad, like, oh my God, this was serious fight with your spouse. And going, man, I'm angry. I'm so fucking angry. Why doesn't this person understand what I'm trying to say? We've never argued like this before. You know who never argued with me like this? That girl I dated in high school. I wonder what she's doing right now.
Because you dated for 2 weeks. You didn't have time to argue.
Right, but it's that it's just not rational at all. Right?
Right.
And that's what we're trying to avoid here. The trigger isn't don't feel emotion. That's not it. The idea is feel the emotion, understand what it means, and act accordingly. That's really all it comes down to. No different than when we were talking about physical self-care. You know, you wouldn't go to the gym and lift heavy weights every day for 100 days in a row and come back after about 4 days going, man, you know what? I think I'm getting weaker. I can't lift that weight. I've been doing this for 2 weeks. Why are my weights not going up? Well, because you've never rested your muscles. Look, man, you got to take some breaks. Well, I don't want to take breaks. I'm really enjoying this. This is my new thing. This is me now.
I want my sick gains.
Exactly. So, you know, these things work against you. But at the end of the day, it's knowing how to catch those things. Stop yourself short, right? We've talked about routines to develop better habits, right? To get away from the bad ones. This is one of those times, right? By sitting back and actually inspecting these things, sorting out what they mean, sorting out what they cause, what caused them and what they're for, and then acting on it is a good way to do that, right? Oh, I'm stressed. I need to go out back and smoke a cigarette. I need to go drink half a bottle of whatever my poison is.
Right.
I need to go do something dumb. Well, has that helped you? You've been doing that for 30 years. This problem hadn't gone away.
Okay, yeah, but doing dumb stuff, one, is oftentimes very, very, very fun.
Sure, and if you're doing the dumb stuff for fun, good on you. Go to town. No one's saying don't go drink. No one's saying don't go pick up your $200 whore. If you've got the means and you're not hurting anybody, do your thing. But if you're doing it to escape an emotion,
yeah, that's
it's not healthy.
Right.
Right? So at the end of that loop is knowing as you're trying to get through these things, you need to know how to replenish yourself. You need to know that you have the ability to put something back in the tank. Regardless of how it's been depleted, my boss is an asshole, my wife is a shrew, my kids are ungrateful fucks. I get through the end of the week and I barely have enough to slide between the sheets and slide into the sleep that I hope I never wake up from. Okay, you're 25.
Right?
It's going to be a really long life. So you have to be able to identify things that are going to help you to bounce back from some of this stuff. And a large part of that is finding a way to reward yourself for actually taking this time and doing this self-care.
Well, and it also has the operant conditioning effect of if you take the time to value that self-care, right? And it makes you, I don't know, feel accomplished or successful or whatever to deal with your own emotional bullshit, you're actually more likely to deal with your emotional bullshit in the future.
Exactly. And the thing is even though getting a resolution should be enough in itself, it doesn't have to be. You can find a way to get that little bit. Now, you know, if your emotional baggage is you've got an eating disorder, maybe don't reward yourself with a trip to the buffet. I mean, well, I guess depending on the kind of eating disorder, right? I guess if you're one of those people that doesn't eat,
a trip to the buffet would certainly be in order, yeah.
But again, it's one of those things. If you're doing something for entertainment, not because you have to cope with something, then it's fine. Go ahead. But understanding how to reward yourself will be the biggest part in getting you to continue to keep up this regimen. And, you know, you can fill it however you want. It can be the 20 minutes in the morning of the and exploring your emotional baggage. It can be dealing with things as they pop into your head, right? As they come up. You know, was it the nail that pops up is the nail that gets hammered, right?
This is,
bam, here it goes. But however you get there, that's kind of the key. And if you can sit down and tell yourself that you're doing this, right? I address what's bothering me. I've gotten to the point of it. I've found some actions that help me respond to that in a healthier way. I don't reinforce my bad habits. I try to reinforce the good habits. And as a result, you know what? I'm feeling pretty good about myself. So I'm going to do this thing that I value as just a little treat for getting it done. No harm in that.
Yeah,
it's how we train all the other dumb animals.
And I think that's absolutely legitimate, dude. And, you know, like I said, you'll start to get very used to a level of emotional quiescence, a level of emotional calm, a level of emotional settlement. We are not feeling any particularly strong emotions, so you'll just kind of be like a very bland form of contempt. It's not that you won't be emotionless. It's just that there won't be anything bothering you. There won't be anything particularly joyous going on. And you'll learn to
understand that that's okay.
Yeah. You don't have to be, you know, in spite of the internet telling you you should always be, you know, of course, what is it on Facebook? You should always be euphorically happy.
Yes, yes. Right? Living your best life. And
on Twitter, you should always be insanely, vehemently, rabidly outraged, you know, and all these other
things. On Grindr, you should be 6'2 with abs of steel and a 10-inch dick. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Were we not going to do them all?
Dude.
Sorry, did I get you hot and bothered there? I couldn't help but notice that you're...
No, I'm trying to figure out whether or not you just came out of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. That's totally it. Hello?
Hey.
But no, we just have to... Whether you're male or female, or whatever in between that you may identify as, the idea here is not, and this is, I think this is an important distinction that has to be made simply for the thread that we were just talking about. This is something for you to come to peace with. This is not something that, whether society deems it socially acceptable or not.
Right.
If you're a big, burly bear of a fucking man, and you know what, every once in a while you need to huddle up and fucking cry it out, if that's what gets you to that next step, if that's what allows you to put that thing away, huddle up and cry your fucking happy ass off. But don't expect the world to hug you.
Yeah, don't expect the world to understand.
This is self-care. All right? There is nothing guaranteed about anybody else, nor is understanding assured. Those that are a little bit more close to this, a little bit closer to this goal, may see and recognize what you're doing, they may even appreciate what it is you're doing. But whatever your little bit of trying to get right with these emotions is of no interest to anybody other than yourself.
Yeah, I won't go so far as to say nobody gives a shit about you but you, but you are really the only person that can control your emotions, at least in any sane, rational mind.
Right.
Right. And of course, you can't control everything all the time because there are, you know, things in life that just happen to us. But at the same time, your ability to manage those responses and manage how you process that information, those experiences, those stimuli, are really going to make the difference.
Right. And again, because it is personal, Mark Mancuso, the guy that wrote the Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck that we talked about the other week.
Yeah.
He had an example where in a group setting, he was talking about the death of a friend and how it had affected him. And, you know, how he had come to the conclusion that, okay, they're dead. Their part in my life is over. I have to carry the fuck on. I've got to get past this, regardless of however I process it. Well, he had the unfortunate chance to express this idea out loud for the first time in front of a father who had lost a child. Who said, oh, so you're telling me I should just move on from my dead child? And he went, yeah, that's what I'm telling you. And I'm not trying to be crass.
Right.
They're gone. Their problems are over. Your problems still exist.
Here you are.
And I'm sorry if that's horrible, but it's the truth of the matter. And that's what it is when it comes down to. What works for you works for you. If someone comes to you looking for help, certainly share your experiences, share your processes. Hey, look, man, this is what I do.
Yeah, and this is how I work my shit out.
But, you know, if that person came to you from help and you start telling them about how you masturbate and cry in the shower and that helps you pull through and they recoil in disgust, that's not their fault. You shared. Now, to be fair, they asked. They asked. You told them, but you don't get to judge how they react to that.
How you get by, man? Salty tears in a shower wank.
Did you see Blade 3? Did you see Blade 3, that part where Jessica Biel's in the shower? Imagine a lot more friction, and that's it.
Dude, hang on, I got an email. Oh, it's Jessica Biel informing you of the restraining order.
Oh, dude, you know what? They let that lapse, dude. She hit 40, and I lost all interest. I was like, did you notice how 15 years ago, all the young ones, we were talking about how hot they were? Have you noticed how they've all gotten less attractive, yet the women that were 15 years older than them have just gotten better looking? It's crazy, right?
I don't know. You and I have very different opinions on what we think attractive women look like.
Well, fair enough. But still, I mean, going through that whole gambit of all the hots, right? The Jessicas and all of those from back then.
Well, because you remember we used to do, like, you know, the Burnett's of the Apocalypse. Yeah. Yeah, we, and I still love that.
And their age is like fine wine, dude.
I'm telling you, Linda Carter's.
I watched Wonder Woman 1984 about a week ago. Still would. Still would.
Dude, I would throw a shot in Linda Carter.
And not even for that iconic status, right? Like, for the same reason I would Betty White. But I mean, no, because, like, legitimately, still would.
Yeah, no.
If Linda Carter was my waitress at the Waffle House, still would.
What if she was your waitress at the Waffle House and had a neck tattoo that said Grandma on it?
Still would,
yeah.
Well, I mean, is it a good tattoo or is it like a prison tattoo?
Oh, an absolute prison tattoo. Oh, you liar.
Yeah, still do it. Yeah, still do it.
All right, so we got a few minutes left. Let's go ahead and hit the big four emotions here. One of the things when you're trying to deal with anger, a lot of times you have to delay that a little bit because anger, a lot of times, there are good reasons to be angry. But a lot of times what we'll find is that anger is a secondary emotion. Something scared you and you're reacting out of anger with it, you right. know, or something surprised you and it made you angry. Because one of the things you learn is that a lot of people don't like to be surprised.
Right.
They value their smooth level playing.
Yeah, don't hide in their closet. Don't do it.
But yeah, no, things may make you sad and you may lash out in anger. So if you're going to do anger, if you're going through something that's making you angry, and please understand, there are perfectly good reasons to be angry. Just make sure that you're not using anger to cover up fear or sadness or surprise or something.
Right. And that's the whole reason for that 10-second, right? Counting to 10 when you get angry. It's not because the anger is going to go away in that count to 10. It's just that in hopes that in that count to 10, the initial shock of whatever it was that did that to you is going to subside some, which by design is supposed to be so that you can then go, oh, wait, okay. All right, I don't need to kick this guy who was hiding in my closet the dick. Doesn't always work that way, but that's what it was for.
Happiness, real quick. You know, as we've been talking, when you're happy, it's perfectly okay to take your victory lap. Whatever your win is, whatever's making you happy. You know what? One of the things when me and Alpha Goomba were locked up here during quarantine when we had the Rona, is she said, you know, I forgot how much you whistle. And it obviously annoys her a little bit, bless her heart. But no, it's one of those things that I do is I enjoy whistling when I'm in a good mood. And unfortunately for her, I'm in a good mood quite a bit of the time. But no, figure out how you celebrate. And I'm going to be one of those people that tells you that celebrating is one of the few really, really good uses of alcohol.
Right. It'll work in a pinch, right? I've spent the last 30 years throwing up my hands and declaring myself Spartacus anytime I get a win.
And dude, that works for you.
If I'm at work, if I'm at home, it doesn't matter where. Ooh, that was good. I'm Spartacus.
Fucking A.
And you know, you push on and you get it done.
And that's the deal. And you enjoy yourself for a moment, and then you know you get on with your day, right? And you may even come back and celebrate a little bit later. That's okay. I mean, those happy memories help us get by as much as the sad memories sometimes help us hold us back a little bit. Right?
You know, and as a matter of fact, as far as rewarding yourself, it's the stupidest little thing. But if I ask Siri what my name is, Siri says, your name is Thundersnow. But you told me I could call you Spartacus. And it makes me laugh every time.
And you know what? I totally get it.
You send me an email, it says, from the rat to Spartacus.
Now I have to do that.
It's the easy. It's just such a stupid little thing, but it makes me grin every time.
So sadness, right? First of all, we have to discuss ennui, because that deep kind of heartfelt, impotent sadness is something that can be enjoyed. Now, please hear me out. For example, this is one of the reasons why we'll watch romantic films.
Right.
Boy meets girl, boy and girl break up. That we'll listen to blues music.
Right.
Right? Because those deep, sorrowful, sad things are still valid emotions.
My baby left me. Took the dog and the truck and
whatever your thing is, right? But for me, it's one of those just crazy, insane, sad things is there's a song called Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want in Ferris Bueller when they're in that museum.
Uh-huh.
And that whole scene just wrecks me, dude. Yeah. But the point is that we've gotten to a weird spot in our society where you're never supposed to be sad, right? You're just not. You're never supposed
to be. You must be failing. If you're not happy, you must be failing at something.
Right. And that doesn't have to be that way. Sad is a perfectly legitimate emotion. You know, when a loved one dies, or a pet dies, you lose your job, or some asshole door dinks your car, right? That you just had the brand new paint job put on,
right,
or something, right? There are legitimate reasons to be sad and experiencing that, and trying to just say nope, never happened.
Yeah, not today.
Yeah,
I mean, you can see things. I mean, even things that are fake.
Yeah.
Right. You read a story, watch a movie, listen to a song. And the person that sang it, wrote it, filmed it, was sad.
Yeah.
And it conveys. And that's kind of the point, right? See Johnny Cash.
His cover of Hurt is awful.
It is awful, but goddamn is it heartfelt.
And for you, that
means the man means it. No, I mean, I don't care for it either.
Oh.
But just the tone of his voice as he's committed to it. He sells the shit out of it.
He absolutely, the sincerity is certainly
And for Johnny Cash to come along, what, 20 years since he'd done anything and go, hey, I want to cover your song. Not only is that an honor to Trent Reznor, but I mean, it obviously moved him enough to say, bring me a guitar.
Yeah. Okay, you win. All right, old man, sing. And lastly, let's go ahead and do fear real quick. Fear is kind of like anger, right? In that it comes upon you very, very suddenly. And just taking a quick second to evaluate what the hell's going on will help you work your way through it, right? Because one of the things that we forget, right, is that being terrified and being exhilarated are exactly the same physical sensation, right? That same fear that you may feel whenever you're going through, say, like a haunted house or you're watching a scary movie.
Right.
That is physiologically no different than the exhilaration you feel whenever you come up over the ridge on the roller coaster.
Right.
So there are times to be afraid and there are times to react, because if something's scaring you, it's probably for a good reason that you need to hurry up and make up your mind whether you're going to fight or run.
Right. Right. Or sometimes something scares you and you get angry because you're so upset at what scared you, right? The moth floating around your head and you lost your shit in public. Like, did anyone see that? Goddamn moth. Kill every moth I see today.
Well, because I'm that way with spiders.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I hate walking through a spider web.
I murder spiders on sight most of the time. Mostly because I know that for reasons, they scare the shit out of me. But the important thing is that recognize that fear and exhilaration, or terror and exhilaration, are really the same thing. It's just about how you see them.
Right.
And it's why some people will go out and they'll cut donuts in the middle of the fucking freeway.
Right.
Because for them, that's a rush, right? That's a kick.
Right.
But if you're not that guy, say, for example, you're in that guy's car sitting in the passenger seat, I'm pretty sure it's fucking terrifying for you.
Yes, yes. I'm ripping the oh shit bar off the off the roof of the car, screaming, we're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die.
So take a minute and check. Is this something, has it surprised you? Did you enjoy the surprise? Was it a bad surprise, or did you just take it badly?
Right.
Right? So go ahead and just take a second and work through that.
And because it is the modern day and people are listening to this on the internet, I think we need to, if what you are afraid of is someone physically attacking you or a situation that could hurt you, flee that, and once safe, stop and think about it. Because I don't want some 22-year-old emailing us because, yeah, a guy came at me with a knife, and while I was pondering why I was afraid, he stabbed the shit out of me. At this point in time, I'm not even sure we wouldn't be held fucking liable.
I don't think so. I don't think we're liable for that. If you get stabbed, it's your own goddamn fault. Oh, and one more thing we do need to footnote. There are physiological associations with emotion, right? So it is possible that just trying to emotionally work through your shit cognitively may not actually do the trick for you. But at least try it first. You may be that guy who needs to go get, I don't know, a Prozac or whatever it is.
Right.
Right. Or you may be one of those angry nutters that needs to get on, you know, psychopathic medication.
Right.
There are all
Or you kinds. May just need to strap on some gloves, go out in the garage and beat on the fucking heavy bag for 5 minutes.
Yeah. My point is that before you go to the doctor to get doped up, try to handle your own shit.
Yes. Obviously. The pharmaceutical approach is always the path of, well, okay, not last resort.
Not last resort.
I put the pharmacological approach firmly ahead of the acupuncturist and the guy that wants to do the feeling the bumps on your head.
Right, phrenology.
Yeah, I did. Go to the pharmacy before those guys.
But yeah, no, try to deal with your shit before you pursue pharmaceutical measures, with the caveat that if you do go to a licensed psychiatrist and he's like, yeah, man, you sound like you're depressed. And you know what? Here, take your Prozac, your Wellbutrin, your Zoloft, your whatever it is. Once he prescribes you that medicine, and I know this is going to sound really fucking obvious, but take your fucking medicine.
On time, as directed. Don't mix all the shit you're not supposed to mix with it. It's my birthday, so I'm going to take two Prozac and half a bottle of Tito's. No.
If you're psycho, take your meds. If you are schizophrenic, take your meds. You know, if you've been prescribed this medicine by a medical professional who has tested you and said, yes, you do, in fact, your think meat is actually fucked.
If you're a sociopath, take your medicine. If you're a psychopath, take your medicine. If you're an arsonist, take your medicine. If you're an infomaniac, hit me up.
Yeah, exactly. Give us a call and give those meds a rest. We'll sort you out.
You don't need those meds. We'll exhaust you. Be like when your dad caught you smoking that cigarette and he made you smoke the whole old pack.
Do you realize what a blow that would be to my ego if I literally had to look somebody in the face and say, yeah, you see that chick? She used to be a nymphomaniac, but I cured her of that. I'd never be right, dude. I would feel like crap.
Well, we just talked about how you can deal with that. So process that shit and move on.
The same way. If I were to ever have sex with an opera singer and she climaxed and didn't shatter every glass in my house, I would feel like the job was half done.
Oh, yeah, I've got like 4 different replies, but none of them are fit for the air.
What else is new?
Yeah, no, these are so bad I won't even say them into this microphone.
Wow, okay.
Exactly.
You want to wrap this up?
Yes. Would you like paper or plastic?
Well, I don't know.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us this week. Tune in next week. We will move into another aspect of self-care, one that's not quite as introspective. Until then, I am still Thundersnow.
And I'm still the Wiggle Rat.
Peace.